ProSpot is brought to you by BetOnline. BetOnline is your number one source for all your basketball info, stats, news, and scores. Get the latest odds and lines and the latest matchup reports for this year's NBA playoffs. BetOnline is your sports intel headquarters this season, as we have you covered for all your insider sports wagering needs, from basketball, MLB, NHL, hockey, golf, to UFC and boxing. The fastest and easiest way to get your betting info, including live betting options and your favorite casino and card games available to play right from your home. So get into the action today by heading to the website or use your mobile device to join, and be sure to use our promo code BLEAV, that's B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% bonus on your first deposit. Bet online, where the game starts.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another version of Bill Roden on Sports. I'm Bill Roden, and broadcasting from Harlem, USA, and here with my friend and co-host, the great Jamal Murphy. Murph, what's happening?
Not much, Bill. You know, NBA playoffs. Celtics did not put a good showing overall so far, but they won that last game. And what do you, there's no NBA games tonight. I don't know what to do with myself.
That's tough, man. So I have to write. I watched, because in honor of the great Jim Brown, who passed away last week, I watched a couple old Cleveland Brown tapes. If you go on YouTube, I watched the 1964 championship game when the Browns upset the Baltimore Colts, the undefeated Baltimore Colts. And it was pretty good. I mean, I think it may have been in color. But, when you watch those old clips, you can say, man, this guy, some clips you watch like Bronco Nagurski or something, that guy couldn't play. But if you watch those clips of Jim Brown, you can say, wow, man, this guy was pretty good. Although you had the defenses were largely white. It was literally man among boys. He was dragging people into the end zone and, cats bumping off him and all that. But, I guess that was something I wrote a story about it for Anscape.
Right.
So I guess, just acknowledge the passing away of a legend. And so and I was just thinking, too, you get to a certain age, and you have younger editors, whenever somebody passes away, they come to you. They think you got to know him.
Right.
And I remember when Bill Russell passed away, he called me. Well, honest truth is, I didn't really have any connection to Bill Russell.
Right.
I never had a good conversation with Bill Russell.
Right.
I mean, never. I mean, I remember standing next to him in one All-Star game or something. And I couldn't figure out what to say. What am I going to say?
Yeah, right.
And then I forgot to say something. Man. He's just like, Well, Mr. Roden, my name's Bill Roden. And at the time, I was at the New York Times. Yeah, I'm Bill Roden. He's like, I know who you are.
Right.
So I just kind of slinked away and all that. So I didn't really have any, that was my only interaction with Russell. But Jim Brown, and I also was probably my bias, because I was always I played football.
Football
in high school, played football in college. And I always regarded basketball players as kind of like prima donnas.
Right.
They got to play in the wintertime, and, they had the shorts, and all the women were these Neanderthals were in the mud and beating the shit out of each other. But I was always more connected to football and a guy like Jim Brown.
Right.
If you were playing football in my era, when I was 15, 16, 17, it was Jim Brown was a guy, Black superstars were few and far between, and he was definitely one of them.
Right.
And, the white writers always said he had an attitude problem. Well, I realize now that meant that he didn't put up with his shit.
Right.
So I acknowledged that. And, it was a pretty major pretty major passing. Somebody asked me what they thought the NFL was going to do. You know, in the NBA, they superimposed Bill Russell. Well, I don't know what the NBA did. I know it was in the Celtics game, they put number six.
And they put the NBA puts, I think every team had, you know, had number six on their jersey this year.
Yeah. So maybe they'll do that. Maybe the NFL will do that number 32.
Yeah. We'll see. We'll see. You never know with the NFL. Let me ask you about that. You know, go, because that's, you know, that's a totally different time. And you mentioned, you know, Jim Brown was one of the few black superstars at the time. So it's almost hard to fathom, you know, like that there were only a few black superstars. So when you watch football back when Jim Brown was playing, how many, you know, black people were on each team, did you think, around that time?
Well, you know, back then they also had quotas, mm-hmm, of how many black people would be on each team. You know, and it's usually an even number. So they could, like, room together. So you might have six, you know, seven, eight. You know, the Green Bay Packers had a handful. You know, it's not like the Packers today, when in their damn near whole team is black, including the quarterback.
Right.
So, yeah, it was a different thing. But this Brown was just a house. And then he got into acting. You know, the big thing I remember is when he retired. You know, because he was filming. He had done some movie called Rio Conchos, and he was filming The Dirty Dozen, which would be a big hit. And they were filming in England. And, you know, and the taping was delayed because of weather. Art Modell, the owner of the team, demanded that Brown leave and come back and join training camp. I remember he had just been named NFL MVP.
Right.
You know, here's Art Modell. You know, they won the title in 64, played for it again, I think, in 66. You know, and he wanted him to come to training camp. And it was like going to fine him $100, which was a lot back then. And so what Brian did is that he called a press conference and announced his retirement, you know, which I thought was like perfect. You know, it was like, man, he's got talking back to these white people.
Right.
You know, so, and that's just the kind of guy he was. He was very, you know, independent, you know, self-defining person. You know, he's a great lacrosse player. In fact, he was even in the ROTC Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know, which is interesting. So, yeah, Jim was, you know, I met him later in my journalism career, probably like when I was at the Times, probably like 81 or 82.
Right.
When I was probably confident enough to, like, actually have a conversation with him. Because, you know,
he was an intimidating guy from all accounts.
Because he didn't suffer fools. So yeah, no, and I couldn't imagine what it'd be like to cover the team. You know, talk about it. Well, Jim, you had a bad game.
but he didn't have too many bad games. I mean, when you look at it, you know, growing up, like my father would talk about Jim Brown, and it was just about how, you know, just what a you know, in today's vernacular, what a beast he was. You know, like the whole thing where he would every time he got tackled, he'd get up really, really slow, and you weren't sure if he was hurt or not. Then the next play, he'd just run over the whole team again.
Right.
I mean, what was he like? Like, can you even compare him to anybody nowadays, like how good he was on the field?
Not really. I mean, it's like you take whoever is the best running back, and that's the problem now. You don't really – you have these running back by committees.
Right.
It's, you know, Emmitt Smith. I'm trying to think of, you know, Eric Dickerson, if you go back. You know, Franco Harris, who Jim Brown hated because he thought he ran out of bounds too much. But he was just – whoever you come up with is like times two.
Right.
Jim Brown. I would suggest people go back and go on YouTube.
Yeah.
Call up some of those games. You know, just those, like, the title game. you know, and he'd just be like running over motherfuckers, man. You know, like three or four people would like be tackling him. He like, you know, like be dragging him, you know. No, he was like great. I thought he would have won more titles.
I think he won three, right? He won three or no?
He only won one.
One. He must have been to three.
He played the Packers, and then it always pissed me off because he played against the Packers, and they would always like win, you know. Mm. And they had Jim Taylor, who was not in Jim Brown's category, but they just had a better team, an overall team.
Right.
And they had enough brothers playing. They had the right brothers, the right positions.
right.
You know. But right. He was a thing. I mean, frankly, the only journalistically, you know, when he was, you know, he would always have these clashes, not always, a few clashes with women.
Mm-hmm.
And that became something you had to address.
Right.
You know, he was like never convicted. I mean, the charges were dropped, you know. But in this era, you always wonder, like in this era,
oh,
in the Me Too era, I mean, forget it. It would be, you know, you think.
But also, I was thinking about that today, you know, thinking about Jim Brown. Not only that, I mean, would it have happened in this era? Because you know, back then it was almost a way of life. Like guys were allowed to get away with that kind of treatment. Like all men in general were getting away with that stuff. That's the whole part of the reason why the Me Too movement came about.
Right.
Was to say, stop now, we're not having this.
I think that's a great point, Jamal. I think that, you know, if that were in this era, somebody would have pulled his coat a long time ago.
Right.
You can't be doing that kind of stuff. You know.
Because that was always, you know, also growing. First of all, on the field, you know, I grew up watching NFL films. So that's another place you can watch. So I grew up watching NFL films and the highlights of Jim Brown. And those highlights withstand the test of time. Like, I don't care when you watch that, you realize how good he was. So me growing up, you know, when people always talk about, you know, who is the best players of all time, I always put, you know, running backs, even me, having never seen him.
Right.
Live would say, you know, Jim Brown, number one or number two, you know, with Walter Payton and like, you know, O.J. Simpson, who I never saw either. But those highlights, they withstand the test of time. You can see how good these guys were, how dominant they were. And then, you know, part of his whole thing, you know, always I remember hearing the story a long time ago about how he had thrown his girlfriend off the balcony of a roof. You know, it would be like my parents would be telling me about Jim Brown, and my dad tell me about all he was doing on the field and all the civil rights stuff. And then my mom say, "Yeah, but he threw his girlfriend out the window on the second floor window." You know, so it was always that.
but and I guess the lesson was, you know, protect your legacy.
Mm.
So that didn't have to be but.
Right.
You know, and eventually, you know, he. I think he has five children.
And, right.
Monique was Leah's wife. You know, really nice lady. They had two kids. I think one of whom plays lacrosse, and you know that was Jim Brown's other big sport.
Right.
Well, he was a great lacrosse player. He's in the Lacrosse Hall of Fame.
Right.
You know, he was a great athlete. In fact, I always give this quiz to people: said, if you could choose five people, in other words, I come to you and say, Jamal, I'm having this competition. I'm not going to tell you the rules. I'm not going to tell you anything. I'm just saying that it's going to be very rigorous. And you could have choose five people of all time to compete in this competition, which is going to be rigorous. It's going to include a whole lot of stuff. So what five athletes would you choose without knowing the rules, without knowing the competition, but knowing that they better be great athletes? Which five athletes of all any generation would you choose to attend this competition? And I always choose my five were because you have to have a woman. You just can't, you know.
Right.
Jim Brown, Jim Thorpe, Serena Williams. I think I maybe even chose Tom Brady.
Mm.
And
you had to put one white guy in there, Bill. I know.
Yeah. Yeah, and I figured, and Will Chamberlain maybe, or maybe just, but I chose Brady, and this is around Deflategate because I knew the guy would do anything to win. Tom Brady would find out some kind of way to win. Whatever the conversation was, he would find some way to win.
Right,
you gotta have somebody like that.
Jim Brown has to be in that five, no question about it. And another story I always remember is, I forget who told it, but you know him, you know, he was in some cold area where there was ice on the ground, and someone told the story how he started to slip on ice, and he was able to balance for like a minute straight, like where any other mortal man would have fell on the ice, Jim Brown was able to. Was able to avoid falling on the ice. That was one of my favorite Jim Brown stories also.
Two blocks. Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of great stories. And then, obviously stuff he did with the Cleveland Summit,
Right.
Summit.
Talk about that, like the civil rights aspect, which, we know, I know he always spoke out. He had a strong voice, like you said, intimidating to whoever. So, what he said, I'm sure, carried a lot of weight.
Yeah.
But what was the real... What was his true significance in that area? You know, when you look at him as a sports figure, were there, was he on the level of Muhammad Ali when it came to that?
Well, I mean, I'm not sure. Very few people are on that level, because Ali was going to give up his heavyweight championship. But the fact that Jim Brown convened a meeting to meet with him, now it depends, and there's a book, Jonathan Eich, wrote a book saying that Jim Brown had this, they were trying to negotiate this closed circuit TV deal to televise all of Ali's fights. So, of course, when he's going to like get locked up, they wanted to find out, depending on who's telling the story, somebody said they were trying to talk him out of it, so they get this deal. But whatever it was, they did have a meeting with him, all the top black athletes of that era. And they emerged from that meeting knowing that Ali was not, he was a man of principle and he believed in what he was doing. It didn't matter what you were doing, he believed in what he was doing. And they emerged from that meeting solidly behind him. Whatever took place in that meeting,
right,
they were convinced that Ali was a man of principle. And he was not going to Vietnam. He was not going to be inducted into the Army. And a lot of those people, I think Jim Brown had sort of a military background. A lot of guys in that meeting had sort of military backgrounds. But they were convinced after that meeting that Ali tried to convince, he wasn't having it. He was sticking to his principles. So the fact that all those people like Bill Russell, Lou Alcindor, later Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the great Willie Davis. I mean, they all flew there to Cleveland to meet with Ali. So that was pretty impressive. That just speaks to the volume, the level of respect they had for Jim. And he had started this Economic Empowerment Association. So he's always about the money, and economic power is sort of what the bottom line was. So it was just, in my generation, just to hear of a black athlete of that magnitude, even speaking about civil rights, was something. I mean, I think Jackie Robinson did to an extent, and even Bill Russell, went to Mississippi to do a clinic. I mean, back in when you didn't want to go to Mississippi.
Right.
So I think, it was all those guys. Now, you didn't say about Willie Mays doing anything like that, but all those guys were becoming, this was like the third wave of black athletes. There was a Jackie Robinson wave in the 40s. Then there was a wave of those guys in like the late 40s and mid 50s who would become stars. But that group with Jim Brown, Curt Flood, Willie Mays, those kind of guys who would become like really, really big stars, stars, contemporary stars, Bill Russell. So the fact that they would participate in the civil rights struggle was significant, you know. So, yeah, so, yeah, man, he was a powerful force of nature.
And then, you know, I guess, you know, you mentioned this a couple of times before, but just, you know, when you talk about Jim Brown and you laud him for all he did, and then, of course, you have to talk about, you know, his shortcomings with you know, the abusive situations with women. And not a question specifically about what he did, but, you know, me personally, I find myself, okay, how do I approach this? How do I, you know, in public, you know, do I just praise him for the things that stood out to me? On how do you address, you know, his shortcomings? Like, how do you feel about that just in general with anybody? Like, we had to do this with Kobe.
Right.
Remember, like, what are your thoughts on just how you can appreciate somebody for the good that they did while at the same time, you know, acknowledging their faults?
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult in a way, particularly if they were contemporaries, if you grow up admiring him. I mean, if you examine Ali's life, and I mean, you know, everybody has some stuff.
Right.
And did that stuff outweigh the good that they did, you know? And I guess you just have to make your own decision about that. And do you acknowledge it? And do you dwell on it? And do you allow that to define who somebody was, you know? Is that, you know, is that who he was, or is that just something he did?
Right.
And later apologize for, acknowledge that this was a shortcoming, and I'm going to move on. You know, and whether you're going to let me move on or not is on you, you know, but I'm going to move on. But it is, journalistically, it poses a thing, you know. I mean, when it gets to a point of, that's what makes things like LeBron James, who's never had, as far as I know, any kind of scandal. The only thing about LeBron is when he did the China stuff.
Right.
You know, and then he's doing business with China. And people are like, wait a minute, man, that's one of the most repressive regimes on earth. You know, Daryl Morey, of all people. You know, we'll get to Ja Morant.
Right.
You know, I guess the question will be, by the time Ja Morant is finished with his career, will he have done enough stuff, enough good acts, enough good deeds, so that this whole silliness with a gun just seems like a blip,
right,
on the screen?
Right.
You know, and that's the thing, Jamal. I guess, you know, we don't necessarily live our lives on this public stage where people could look at stuff you did.
Right.
You know. And you got to explain yourself for it. But if you live on a private, on this public stage, you know, Obama and things like that, you know, and you just have to be very careful of your legacy, you know. But the question you ask is as a journalist, and particularly, I think sometimes if you're, you know, like the guy who busted Jesse Jackson when Jesse Jackson made his Hometown remarks. And he made these remarks around some black reporters, thinking that, hey, man, you know, we all just brothers. And this one brother, you know, got the Washington Post, you know, chose to write about it. You know, of course, he became the deputy editor and all that. You know, but, you know, you just have to, I guess, pick and choose, you know, and it depends. It probably depends on a lot of stuff, you know. Are you friends? What's the level of conflict of interest? You know, I think a lot of white reporters with black people don't care, you know.
Right.
They'll tear down somebody's reputation. Well, it was a matter of fact, you know, he did it.
You know? Right.
Then we find out about your shit. He said, well, look what you said you did. You
know? Right.
So that's a long way of saying, I don't know.
Right. And I guess you can't take away either. Right, you can't take away the bad stuff he did, right? But you can't take away the good stuff he did either. Right? You can't wipe that from people's memories, what he meant to people when he, you know, if he stood up for, you know, a certain people, those, you're not going to forget that, and you shouldn't. I guess it's just that way all the way around. Like,
you can't be bullied. I mean, you have to be as resolute about your conviction as the people coming out. They'll say, well, come on, how can you even say that? Because didn't you know he did this? And somebody said, yeah, but this is what was important too. And I'm not going to bury him because of that.
Right.
Your wife may never speak to you again. You got to take all these things into account.
Right. Yeah. So RIP, the great Jim Brown, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. On to the playoffs.
On to the playoffs.
I mean, seriously, even when you write about these lies, you know, Joe Russell, you know, his marriages and divorces and all of that.
Right.
You know, and that's, you know, with celebrities, you know, I read these accounts of these celebrities, you know, actors and actresses married 2, 3, 4 times. And, you know, who's it? Lauren Bacall. And who's the guy? Humphrey Bogart, Lauren Bacall. And, you know, these great actors, you look at their lives. Oh, man, she's married a couple of times, accused of having an affair. And,
right.
You know, and that didn't make her any less of an actress, you know, but it's just all part of the picture that you learn about. Do we want to learn about stuff, or do we just want to, you know, like Judy Garland and Wizard of Oz, she was this great child actor, and then later she had all these problems, man, problem with drugs and this and that, you know, and Elvis Presley.
Yep.
You know, Michael Jackson. I mean, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
On and on and on, you know. So, I don't know, maybe we just should just be ignorant. I said, you know. Taylor Swift. I know nothing about Taylor Swift.
but you will. The point is, you will at some point hear something. You'll hear something.
She's making like almost like $1 billion.
Yeah, her and Beyonce are fighting it out for who makes the most money on tour.
I think it's got to be Taylor Swift, right? Or is Beyonce?
I saw a stat that Beyonce is higher. It was something ridiculous. Like Beyonce's tour is going to gross $6 billion.
Billion.
And Taylor Swift's going to gross $3 billion, you know? So they're both good.
And then you think about it, if you like LeBron James, you say, man, we're like paupers.
Yeah, that's nothing.
What are we making? We ain't making nothing.
Yeah, they make what LeBron makes in a year in a night.
In a night.
So, you know.
Puts that shit in perspective.
Yeah, seriously. It's all entertainment, though. It's all entertainment.
All good. Yeah.
Speaking of that entertainment, man.
We chose the wrong profession, man.
Yeah, I hear that. But speaking of entertainment, NBA playoffs, it's been, you know, it was entertaining until this last round when everything seemed to go by so quickly. The NBA finals doesn't start till June 1st, regardless of what happens in this Heat-Celtics series. So we're going to have to wait for basketball.
You know, I mean, even if they expand the series, like, you know, well, first, I guess you talk about, you know, I did a piece on Doc Rivers.
Yep.
Of course, they blew it a couple of times, man. They were up. Then they went to Philadelphia with a chance. They were up 3-1. No, 3-2.
3-2, yep.
3-2, chance to close them out. At home, didn't. Uh-oh. Then went back to Boston, got blown out. You know, Doc's fired a couple of days later. And I talked to him in his office between after game 5 and before game 6. And, you know, Doc is a great, just almost opposite. Great guy, great conversation, you know. You know, but he was talking about just the craziness of the profession of coaching, that just getting fired and, you know, and we were talking about Joe Mazzulla. So, you know, okay, he wins and they're going to love him. Then you go to the next round and then it starts all over again.
And it's and nowadays it's game by game. Right. That's what this the whole media thing, the whole 24/7 media cycles. It drives me crazy. It's just like, can we just wait? At least can we go by series? At least like you said, can we go by? What, can we wait till the end of the series to see what happens? No, they'll crucify you. Lose game five, you're terrible. You win game six, you're the greatest. You lose game seven, you're terrible. Like what are we doing?
Right, and then you lose a series. I mean, they talk about with Mazzullo firing him.
Yeah.
If this guy loses a series, which you know it kind of looks kind of bleak. I shouldn't say what I feel because I always jinx teams.
But go ahead and jinx them, Bill.
I don't want to jinx them because it's too good a story for them. It's too good a story for if they win.
Right.
You know, because everybody's just like, I mean, they're killing him. Boston Radio, I mean, like murdering this guy, like putting his name on the post office. You know, wanted. Yeah.
Murdering so much that he kind of, you know, they basically, you know, he was forced to at least fake submit. Did you see his press conference when they went down game three? He's like, he comes out right away this time.
My fault.
It's my fault. It's all my fault. You know, I didn't have him ready.
Right.
They're like, then they're asking questions. Well, what do you mean specifically?
Let's drill down a little more. How did you do?
Was it the speech you gave?
Right.
Was it that speech? You don't know how to give speeches. Is that it?
Right. Do you think that you need to? You know, just yeah. And again, the media is still this largely overwhelmingly white media.
Yeah.
You have a few brothers that are interspersed, but this is largely white male media.
Right.
And it's always bad for black guys to be judged by white guys.
Right.
It's just never a good combination, ever. And I know, whoa, what do you mean? Oh, there you go. You know, oh, ran out of right, you know. Now, there you go. Yeah, oh, come on, you know.
I know what you mean. I know what you mean.
Oh, that's amazing when you hear these conversations. And if you have a caller calling the show, and I was a racist, and two white, oh, come on, Jesus, hey. And then they'll go to all the black people they know. I know Stephen A. Or I know what, you know.
Right.
You know.
That's the culture of the media, regardless of race. You know, they just want to, you know, if they decide, you know, and we're part of they, you know, I'm just, but if the media.
I ain't a part of they.
That's true. I'm not a part of that they. But, you know, it's like, okay. I made this proclamation about you already. I don't think you're a good coach.
Right.
So whatever you do, that's my agenda. Becomes trying to prove myself right.
Exactly.
You know, like you know we okay. You know, fine. He did well. You know, and they beat Philly. Okay, they're just waiting for the opportunity to jump back on you.
Well, you know? We do that even our story. Remember, there's a story you did during the Big East. Somebody.
Yeah, Shaka Smart, I think.
Yeah, did he get you? And I've done that in a position too, you know, you write the story. And that's why I try to tell people about how I'm about the story.
Right.
If I'm writing about you and how great you are, when the story runs, I want you to do great. Now, next week, it can be different. And I don't care. But for this day that this story comes out, I want you to do well because that's what the story is about, how great you are.
Right. Right, yeah, you know, I should have wrote it a week earlier before he won the Big East tournament, but I wrote it during that, and they lose in the second round of the NCAA tournament. You know,
what do you mean, like the kind of guy who's you know what you're talking about?
I thought you said he was great.
You know, I'm writing about Doc Rivers, although I was like trying the whole theme was that I may get fired. You know,
right?
It was not like and explain it like you know. Like he said something like with Joe Mazzullo, he said, you know, he said he's taking on the hardest job maybe ever.
Right.
You know, ever. That the only thing he could do to get people off his back is go further than they did last year. And they went to the NBA Finals last year.
Right. All you can do is
win.
Win the championship. You know? That's all you can do.
So, you know, what are you supposed to do? And he said, well, if you win, it's fine. And if you don't, who cares?
Right. And the Mazzullo thing is worse to me. It's like, again, you know, to like the media badgering and jumping on people. This guy is 34 years old, okay? So we know he has no experience. We knew that going in, right? So to jump on him, like, oh, you're mad at him because he doesn't have experience, because he's calling a time, he's never been in this situation before. He's calling timeouts maybe when, you know, when he should or shouldn't, whatever. But you're jumping on him like you're making some big revelation. Like, right. He's 30. This is what he's supposed to be doing. If you're mad that he's in position, go get mad at Brad Stevens for hiring him.
Well, they're probably mad at him too. You know, if Brad, you come down and coach.
Right.
It's your mess. You fix it.
Right.
So it would be great to have a great turnaround. Now, in this situation, I don't know, what would you consider a great turnaround here? They were about to get swept. They went to Miami and won. What constitutes saving face?
I think winning this next home game, game five, I think if you get to a game six, you kind of have saved face a little bit. All right. You went down 3-0, you won two games. You get to game six, play a tough game six, lose. I think you've saved a little face. You know, I think people are at the point now where they respect the Heat. You have no choice but to respect the Heat and Jimmy Butler right now, and Spoelstra. Spoelstra's another one, right? Now everybody is like, they think it's cool to say Spoelstra's one of the best coach in the NBA, right? Oh, no shit. Now that he's winning, what were you saying in the regular season? I didn't hear all this. Spoelstra's the greatest coach. You know, you wait until this guy does the impossible. Now he's a great coach. He's been a great coach.
Do you think that they could beat Denver in the Great White Hope?
Do you think? Yeah, I mean they could. We've been betting against the Heat every round so far, and the way they're playing. First of all, they're playing out of their minds, right? They're playing much better than they did in the regular season. They were one of the worst three point shooting teams in the league in the regular season. Now they're one of the best in the playoffs. So they're playing great. Yeah, they could, but you know that Great White Hope is tough out there in Denver, man. I would pick Denver in seven. So that there shows you I think it's close. But they could do it, but it'll be tough because Denver has, you know, Denver and Miami are playing the best basketball. They're
playing great.
Yeah, so you see why they're at this position. And Denver's a scrappy team. They're well coached too, but they do have, you know, I think Jokic, I don't know what the Heat would do with him. You know, they're not even a big team.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. That's going to be a big problem, you know, because I think, you know, they talk about all these undrafted players. And when you play, they're waiting for some team to make them look like undrafted players.
You know? I keep waiting for it to happen. I'm like, all right, I'm watching Jaylen Brown get abused by, you know, Max Strus and whoever else. And I'm thinking to myself, like, Jaylen Brown, are you not better than him? Can you just show it? Like, you know, this guy looks better than you. Can you prove to us that you're better than him? I mean, you know, that you're supposed to be the guy. What happened?
Yeah, I know. I know it's a million-dollar question. That's what I got Joe Mazzulla trying to figure out. But clearly there's a puzzle. There's a puzzle that he's not been able to figure out. Maybe figured out last night, you know. But I think they would be a better matchup, at least for our business, for rating.
Right.
I mean, the Lakers in Denver be bad enough. I mean, Boston, that would be bad enough.
Right. Yeah. Boston never would be bad enough. You're right.
Denver and Miami, I guess back to purest basketball.
Yeah.
And yeah. People don't have shit else to do.
Yeah. And it's a shame, right? Because, like I said, those are the teams playing, you know, the best basketball by far, but nobody cares. You know, nobody wants to, you know, I mean, I'll watch, but I mean, the average fan is not going to. You know, if it's not the Lakers or the Celtics or one of those teams in it.
The Warriors, you know. Tells
the Warriors.
Steph, when you see him on the commercials, you know.
But don't you think Jokic, as the Great White Hope, shouldn't he be able to garner some of that enthusiasm?
A little bit. But remember, he's a Great White foreign hope.
Right.
Now, if it had been, I don't know what they'd do if he was American born, right? Well, he might be running for vice president or something.
Right, if he were Caitlin Clark.
Right, if he was,
you know, might be a little different.
Might be, that's right, be a Caitlin Clark.
Don't forget her. Don't forget her, Bill.
But yeah, man.
Maybe if Denver wins, they'll invite Caitlin to the White House too.
Yeah, why don't you come? Since you've been, you know, or they invite the Biden will buy both teams. Both teams played hard. Remember that?
Yeah.
When, Rasheed Wallace.
Yeah.
They made him come out and talk because he wouldn't talk. And he would just come out and say, both teams played hard. And somebody, I used to have the T-shirt. They came over with a T-shirt that said, both teams played hard.
Yeah, the great Rasheed Wallace, who now is, he just slams Doc Rivers. Did you see that, what he said about Doc Rivers?
No, what did he say?
He was on a podcast and he said that, he basically said, this Doc Rivers doesn't coach. He, you know, when he was in Boston, the players had to do it on their own. And he was like, this is why, you know, Doc can't get it done, basically. He slammed him.
Wow. And Rasheed, isn't Rasheed a coach now?
He was. I know he was at Memphis under Penny Hardaway. I don't know if he's still there.
Like a high school coach.
Maybe now. Because I know he was an assistant at Memphis for a while, but then he left. So I don't know what he's doing now.
Yeah, he probably said, man, I can't handle this.
He can't handle this. He's like, I can't coach either.
Yeah. I remember I talked to Rod Strickland once. And, you know, Rod, I don't know if Rod is still coaching, but he was on.
Yeah, he's at LIU.
Oh, really?
Head coach at LIU, yep.
Rod Strickland?
Yep. His last year was his first year.
Oh, wow. Okay. Great. But I remember talking to him about coaching, and I was reminding him of all the stuff he did as a player. And I remember he said, you know, I may want to call some of my coaches and apologize. Because I didn't realize, we ought to get Rod on the because, you know, Rod had a long NBA career.
Oh, yeah.
Long NBA career. He acknowledged, you know, he was probably a piece of work as a player. A lot of these guys, then they become head coaches. That's like people becoming parents. See?
Right. Exactly, so. Like that. You know, as for this 3-1 deficit, no, Boston closed it to 3-1 now. The only other team in major sports that's done this, you know, in terms of basketball and baseball, is the Boston Red Sox. So maybe it's a Boston thing.
Yeah, I know. They came back, right? They came back.
Yeah, Boston came back 3-0 against the Yankees, and that was the first time ever. Yeah. So, you know, maybe it's a Boston thing.
Somebody's pointing out, yeah, well, in baseball, you find you have a different pitcher. You have a different pitcher every game.
I guess. But to me, the way they looked, that was a big win. No matter what, that was a big win last night for Boston, because game three was such an embarrassment.
Right.
You know, their reputation, it looked like they lost everything. Their reputations, they looked like a beaten dog who still wanted to love the master that's beating him. You know what I'm saying? You know, it was like when I saw Jaylen Brown, they're down 30, and he like mistakenly knocks Bam Adebayo over, and then he rushes to help him up. I'm like, are you serious right now? This can't be happening right now.
Oh, man. Yeah, that's tough. Like, what do they call the Stockholm syndrome? Yeah.
I think they all look scared of Jimmy Butler.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, no one's scared of him during the regular season.
Yeah. I don't understand. So maybe the only thing, you know, maybe they win a game and all of a sudden they're confident again. You know, so we'll see.
We'll see. We shall see. Well, that's good, man. Well, this is a good wrap up. The great Jim Brown.
Yes.
The NBA playoffs, big game five tomorrow. Game five tomorrow in Boston, and then nothing, man. We have to wait till June 1st. You know.
Yeah. What did you think about LeBron hinting at retirement? You think that was real or not?
I think part of it's real. Part of it, I think, is just the dramatic side of LeBron. But I could imagine after you get swept like that, I'm sure, and how hard it is, and his tongue was hanging out of his mouth.
Right.
You're at that point, you got to really think, do I really want to do this? I'm sure he does.
Right.
I'm sure he does want to do it again. But right in the aftermath, I think it's kind of hard.
Well, he has his son coming down the pike. His son is going to USC next year to play. All plans are for him to be a one and done. And, you know, maybe next year he can find a way to play with Bronny.
Is he that? Have you seen him? Is he that good? Is Bronny that good? I mean, I'd imagine that it's kind of like LeBron's got so much juice.
Right.
That it ain't like his son's going to be the average rookie.
Right. And, yeah, in terms of is he that good, he's not one of those guys who's top five. in his high school class, and you're just you're like, oh yeah, he's a one and done. So no, he's not that good.
He's Ja Morant. Yeah.
No, he's not. I mean, not yet. Doesn't look like Ja Morant yet. But Ja Morant didn't look like Ja Morant till his sophomore year in college. So, you know, I mean, he looks like one of those guys. Like, it maybe if he played 2 or 3 years in college, then he'd be a legitimate pro. Right. I think one and done looks a little rushed.
Yeah, you know, and somebody said, is what's his dream? Not LeBron's dream.
Right. And LeBron actually brought that up, because I think when he was, you know, pondering retirement to the press, someone asked him, well, what about, don't you want to play with your son in a couple years? And LeBron said, well, that's my dream. It doesn't mean it's his. So he did say that.
Right. Which is good if he believes it.
No, I don't think he believes it.
So, would you like, why don't we share a dream, son?
Exactly. So yeah. That's where we are. Like you said, June 1st finals. It'll be Denver versus somebody, most likely the Heat.
Right.
We'll see if the Celtics can at least make it interesting with one more win.
Yeah, that will make it kind of interesting. So we'll see. But regardless, we'll be there.
Yeah.
You know, we'll be there. And up until then, we'll have to think of, maybe we should talk about NFL. We'll start NFL training camps or something. Although they don't even open.
Hey, we won't be alone. You know, people talk NFL all year round. You know that.
You never go wrong with NFL.
Never go wrong with the NFL. You don't want to talk baseball, Bill?
No. Yeah. I was listening to some attendance figures.
Oh, wow.
Terrible. Like the Tampa Bay.
Like, best team in baseball.
Yeah, they drew some like 8,000 people. And Oakland, worse than that. And they're trying to go to Las Vegas. Las Vegas, we don't want them.
Seriously.
Don't bring those losers here.
Yeah. Yeah, and baseball is such a mess. You know, you got franchises that don't spend any money.
Yeah.
And then you got, you know, the Yankees and the Mets and the Red Sox and the Dodgers spending all the money.
Yeah, how are your Mets doing?
They started to they bounced back. They're respectable again. They're in shouting range. They'll be all right. You know.
Yeah.
Started off slow, and as did the Yankees, and the Yankees are on a tear now. So.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. We don't even deal with it until the All-Star game.
That's true.
If we deal with it then.
Right.
All right, man. Well, you can tell we're scraping the bottom of the barrel now. Next week we'll be talking about
baseball.
The hockey playoffs.
Right. I lost track of what happened in hockey. I was trying to keep up when the Rangers and the Devils were involved, and now I don't know who's
Las Vegas. The Las Vegas.
Yeah, Las Vegas, Dallas, or something like that, or in the Carolina and Florida in the East.
Yeah, your fellow players, the team with the most black players.
I think a lot of them have just one, so I don't know who to root for.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that's our hockey wrap up for now. So.
There you go.
All right, man. Well, listen, you know, enjoy game 5. Enjoy the rest of the summer. You know, we love you. Yes. Next week, we're going to if you are part of our loyal subscribers, what are we going to do, Jamal, next week?
We'll probably go live on YouTube starting next week. So we'll put some reminders up. Keep listening on the audio side. You know, keep listening wherever you listen to your podcast. We're there. We appreciate it. And we're brought to you by Bet Online.
And there you have it. Bet Online.
Who you got tomorrow, Bill? Boston are 7.5-point favorites. Who you got?
I'm voting for the best story, man.
You're not falling for that one.
I figured what the best story is. That's who I'm for, always.
I hear you. So you got Boston, then?
Yeah. Okay.
Just to win.
Yeah. All right, man. I will commit no further. All right, everybody. Listen, take that Benadryl and Zyrtex. Keep praying. Stay safe. And we'll see you next week. God bless.